So we asked on Twitter how you, our listeners, wanted mainstream news outlets to treat material released by terror organizations. Now we'll hear from three of you: Nathan Hankins, a hospital security officer in Jackson, Wyoming, Scott Westman, an Atlanta lawyer, and Karen Hagen, a Louisville veterinarian. Hey, everyone. Welcome to On the Media.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hello.
I'll poll you individually first. What images have you seen? Nathan?
I've seen the beheading videos and the two lectures.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Scott?
I have seen the Soltlof and the Haynes beheading videos.
And Karen?
I have seen stills of the beheadings and the Cantley stills. I do not want to watch any of the beheadings.
Any of you face any obstacles in trying to see any portion of this material that you did decide to view?
This is Scott. I think I probably would have watched the Foley video when it initially came out, but by the time I sort of realized that it had happened, it had been scrubbed from Twitter and from basically every other mainstream news outlet.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Scott, that news organizations should do with the videos? Should they air them come what may? Should they withhold them? What?
I look at it as a question somewhat of the broadcast type. If it's something that is going to be shown essentially indiscriminately to anyone who happens to pass by the TV, for example, nightly news, then I think that there's a different standard that is in order from a site where you have to click to decide whether you want to watch it.
So you think that if a social network scrubs a video of a beheading from its site, that it's acting paternalistically and to your disadvantage?
Very much so. They don't know why I want to view it, or why I've chosen to, at least. And to make a blanket decision that no one could benefit from this, or that society is better if this video is not viewed, is to jump to all kinds of conclusions about what the video does to people, what it is meant to do, and essentially who wins when the video is displayed or not.
Nathan, you said that because the videos are online, you wanted ordinary news outlets to report on them to provide you the context that you need to process the images. What did you mean?
Well, I guess I want news to provide context, not just for me, but for anybody viewing them. You know, what ends up happening is it ends up being pushed to the farthest reaches of the internet, and then when I go looking for it, I end up finding it's cast in like a conspiracy light or something along those lines, and I want to see it so that, you know, I want to get context from the professionals.
Karen, I want to ask you, you only saw stills from the videos. You felt you'd seen enough. Can you tell me why you limited your consumption just to stills?
I feel like we're actually playing into the extremist hands by propagating the message. We've become a messenger for their propaganda by showing these videos. Just by over and over having these on YouTube or Twitter or anything like that, I feel like their availability is allowing their message to become more available. Hmm. We've become part of the propaganda machine.
Now, that, of course, sets you up directly apart from Scott, who doesn't want paternalistic news organizations making his consumption decisions for him.
And most of the time, I would completely agree. I definitely don't want to live in a nanny state. But in this case, I feel like they want us to show everyone the violence that they're capable of. And the more people that see it, the happier they're going to be about it. Why should we make them happy?
Nathan, I'm going to bring up something that is maybe a little confrontational. And it has to do with context that you described before, your desire for news organizations to sort of help sort this out for you. There's also another phenomenon, and that's kind of human bloodlust. Whatever that impulse is that makes you turn your head to see the wreckage on the highway in case there's some gore there, that makes us look at beheading videos as a sort of terror porn. Having viewed some of this stuff, do you ever feel personally, I don't know, dirty?
Yeah, absolutely. To some degree, it's what, you know, Karen was saying about whether I'm playing into their hand, or like you said, just whether I'm, giving in to baser instincts. I guess I just want to see it for myself, because if I'm getting it from, you know, what other people said they saw, or, you know, the site that says that it didn't really happen or that it was some kind of a government conspiracy, they get their way. I think the bloodlust is going to be used by somebody, so I want news agencies that I have more faith in to be able to provide context to better inform people.
Some of what we've witnessed from ISIS is just kind of unfathomable on every level. Do you think that the experience you've had over the past couple of weeks looking at this material has actually added to your understanding of the geopolitics of radical Islam, particularly in the Middle East, and of religious doctrine versus just plain extremism? Do you know more than you did before for having viewed this stuff?
Obviously, I want to say yes. I just have to say no, I didn't. I don't think specifically watching those videos I gained anything.
Scott?
Oh, I definitely think that I did. As horrifying and unpleasant as it is to witness something like that, I think that I learned to see a propaganda video for what it is. From my view, anyway, there was a certain clumsiness to the videos that I would not have been able to see if I had simply taken a CNN anchor's description at face value. There's a certain ham-handedness to the speech that the victims are required to give. And what I'm left with, of course, is the horror of this evil act, but at the same time, a sense of the humanity that pervades the entire scene. And in some ways, it tempered some of the instinctive fear that I had when I thought about ISIS and the horrible things that they're doing.
Karen, your patients are absolutely out of control. What kind of operation are you running there?
Do you hear them barking? I'm so sorry.
Let me ask you on the flip side, Karen, not having looked at the most gruesome images, do you feel somehow deprived of nuance, texture, and a kind of a visceral reaction that might help inform your understanding of what the hell is going on in the world?
Gosh, no, I don't feel deprived. We already know that these people are barbarians. Do I need to see a beheading to know what happens in a beheading? No, I don't need to see it. We already know that they're capable of all kinds of terrible acts. You know, just because it's happening to Westerners now doesn't mean they haven't treated women terribly. Now that Western journalists have become targets, now we're all paying attention.
Hmm. It sounds to me like we've played to a draw. I can draw a triangle of your positions. Is the answer that there is no hard and fast answer? And what do you say to my assertion that we just have to call them as we see them as the stories erupt?
This is Karen. That's why you got the big bucks, I suppose.
No, ma'am. I'm in public radio.
Yes, I realize that.
Nathan?
Absolutely, and I appreciate you providing me with that cop-out.
Well, I'm here to serve, Nathan, to protect and serve. Thank you, one and all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
We just heard Nathan Hankins of Jackson, Wyoming, Scott Westman of Atlanta, Georgia, and Karen Hagen, an apparently very successful veterinarian in Louisville, Kentucky.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.